What is the best way to build a brand or product with real impact? And how do we create a company known for making positive change in our world while also building an inspiring place to work? And how do we think more critically about what our customers desire and how they interact with the world using our products or services? You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bage. Today, we're off to Denmark to meet one of the partners of Red Associates, a strategic consultancy with offices in Copenhagen and New York, which is all about what it calls a human-centered approach to doing business, by looking at the world of business through the lens of the human sciences. My guest is one of the firm's partners, Charlotte Vangsgaard, who says Red helps their clients to put people and human nature at the heart of their decision-making and strategy, moving away from a reliance on figures and data, what Charlotte calls MBA-type thinking. Red helped guide a huge turnaround at Lego by getting the company to think more about how children play, and has worked with Ford to design vehicles for how people want to experience driving. And they're working with a host of other clients around the world to discover their real potential inside and out. For Charlotte, the positive impact Red is able to make in sectors from tech to finance to mobility has also been the realization of her own career goals. She began her career in politics and thought her aim to work on social impact would in fact have to be put to the side. She did go on to work in economic development for the United Nations Development Program in North Africa before working for the Danish government. But through Red, she also found how to have impact through the world of business. Here now is our conversation.
Red Associates is a 15-year-old, 16-year-old maybe consulting firm, strategy consulting firm that is based on this core idea that for businesses to make good business decisions, they need to understand people better. So we bring a human perspective, social science-based perspective into businesses by researching how people think and feel and dream what they aspire for themselves, for the world, and understanding of that into all business decisions. And we do that across the world in very different industries, in everything from healthcare, the social impact space, to the luxury industry. So really across. And we're based in Copenhagen and New York, where we have offices. And then we sort of work with clients in Paris, London, New York, and Northern Europe.
It's a fascinating business, and I want to dig into some specifics on the work that you are doing. But first, Charlotte, I would just love to hear how you came into the company. You started out on a different career path, I think, studying political science. So talk to me just a little bit about what brought you into this world of consulting and what the idea was like 15 years ago.
I started out in a very different way. I'm a political scientist. When I studied political science, it was very obvious that you would go into some sort of government, certainly not business. So I started working for the UN, doing development work in the Middle East, where the whole idea was to try from a social perspective to mitigate negative effects of economic reform that was being tried out at that point ages ago. That was my first job, and I thought that would be my career. And then I quite quickly realized that it wasn't for me. There's a lot of fantastic work happening in that space, but the UN is a very large, complicated organization, and for me, that meant that I felt that I wasn't really, I drowned in the bureaucracy and the rules and couldn't really see how my specific contributions were making any difference whatsoever. So I didn't want to do that anymore. So I went back to Denmark and wrote speeches for a while, still staying in government. And then I realized, well, this is really boring. I want to change. So I took an MBA, not because I was particularly interested in the MBA, but because some smart people told me that if you want to do a dramatic career change, you need to do something to shift your resume so people would believe what you're saying when you say that you're serious about, for example, in this case, business. So I did, and I joined Red Associates. It had existed for a few months at that point. I joined a very ambitious, yet it felt like a completely unrealistic project, which was to introduce the social sciences as a decision tool into business. Into business decisions. And that's really what we've been working on ever since. But back then, I felt that I sort of had to leave behind all that social impact, social change work that had led me to development work. That didn't really belong in business and there was no space for it. It was seen as something that the do-gooders would do. If any relevance, then it would be niche projects in companies that the CSR teams would take on, and it would have no real impact on businesses. So I kind of left that behind and focused on building with the other guys, the company, building a company that could take this new perspective into business decisions and to change the way businesses operate and service their clients or customers.
It's a really interesting story. And there's something that you said when we first spoke, telling me that story about sort of having to put aside your interest in wanting to have an impact, especially in a social space, but then realizing at a time that you didn't really need to, that it was important to sort of be yourself, and that in an entrepreneurial way, you could show some of yourself and inject that into the work and the very important work that the company is doing. Talk to me a little bit about that sort of discovery and how important that has been for you, both personally and professionally.
I'm getting old. And I think when you get old, you start thinking about whether you're actually doing the things that really, that matter to you. And for me, there was a reason why I went into development back then. It was because I thought there were so many unjust things in the world. It felt wrong not to be working on those. I thought, well, it's such a difficult space and I don't even know how to succeed there. But then over the last couple of years, it's as if the world has, it has changed. Businesses are changing. So there is a much bigger awareness in businesses today that to be successful in business, you need to be thinking about the impact you're having on the social worlds around you. It's not only about sort of short-term earnings and quarterly earnings and short-term goals, running a business and doing well. It's also the longer-term implications of the kind of work you do and the way you impact your customers and consumers, the world that your products or services live in. And with that realize, and I mean, it's no surprise. I mean, you don't have to go online for a second to see how many disasters are evolving around us. Obviously, the dramatic climate change. But these days, I think no one with any heart can look at the news without also thinking that the social disasters are enormous. And it feels kind of ridiculous not to think about all those enormous challenges that mankind is faced with and that businesses can impact. It feels ridiculous not to take that a little bit seriously and be thoughtful and devote serious brain space and money to figure out what to do about it, how to use your business to also drive social impact. And that's, of course, where consulting firms like Real Associates come in. And for me personally, that has meant that we increasingly are able to combine sort of this big push that isn't over, pushing social science into companies and putting sort of people's behaviors and dreams and aspirations at the heart of business decisions. So that is not done, right? We'll keep on doing that. But combining that with this angle of, social impact and thinking through with our clients, what does whatever they do, how do those products or ways of producing them impact the world, and how could that impact be a positive one so that companies don't just leave the world behind a little more effective. Companies may actually also leave the world more equitable and a little greener at trying to help them do that.
Well, talk to me actually a little bit about how that works. You talked about using sort of social sciences and this human-centered approach to doing business across your portfolio. You know, it seems to be sort of butting up against or jarring with the way that a lot of people have come to do business, and that is through technology, I guess we can say, relying on data, algorithms, things like that, especially in guiding decision-making. But now we have such an interest in reacting to consumer behavior and interest. So talk to me about actually how that sort of human-centered design works.
I think that the way to think about it is that, you know, for a long time, and even mostly today, obviously, as a business leader, lots and lots of decisions need to be made all the time about, you know, where to invest, what kind of campaigns to create, what markets to focus on, what new products to launch. And most business leaders are trained in a very particular type of data to make those decisions. And that data is very often, it's quantitative, so it's numbers, it translates nicely into also dollar signs. It's easy to make those calculations. So it's not very numeric, but it's also very often built on an underlying assumption that the past performance and past behaviors are good indicators of future performance and behaviors? I would say that both these fundamental logics are, they're not 100% wrong, but they are not 100% right either. So first, this whole idea that numeric, assigning a numeric value to a behavior is the most important thing when you're going to make a decision, I think is a flawed logic. I think assigning a meaning and understanding meaning and uncovering what are the underlying drivers behind people's behaviors and choices is a lot more important than being able to assign a numeric value to something that is so synthesized in a way that it loses all meaning, in fact. So that's one aspect. And the other aspect is that to use past behaviors and past performance as an indicator of future performance and behaviors in a situation where lots of things are changing, in a very stable environment where you know your business and your customers very well and where the trend line is quite stable, then by all means, don't speak to people like us, anthropologists and political scientists and sociologists. Do your numbers, just extend the trend line and you're fine. But if you're looking at a world where a lot of the underlying drivers that you've been relying on may be shifting and where you feel a little bit unsure that you're right, that the past is a good predictor of the future, then using a different kind of data and different type of insight to drive your business, I think, becomes really important. And that's where anthropologists and people that approach the world more from a, that use many different types of data, that don't just focus on what people report or say to you in surveys and stuff, but actually focus on the context of behaviors and the context of people's dreams and aspirations. And from that, try to say something about what will be important in the future, looking at how that context around people's choices is changing, I think becomes really, yeah, valuable. There's a lot of demand for it because I think a lot of clients are realizing that it's just not enough to use that kind of old, but historic data.
Yeah, I think you've called that sort of a classic MBA way or style of running a business driven by sort of data. But I love this idea of sort of looking at the wider world and being a bit reactive. You know, we talk about impact on the outside for a company in its business, in the products it might be selling, and how it's talking to its core clientele. But what does your business do when looking at a company as a whole? I think a big part of having an impact, being transparent, and, you know, really making a change in our world comes down to what the core of a business is from the inside out, I guess. When looking at the model of your company, it seems to be sort of an example of that. How do you talk to clients about that importance in growing a company?
I think all our clients are sort of struggling with figuring out what should, yeah, I'm you know, being a very relative social scientist, I stop myself when I say all, because I think all and everything is a very difficult words to ever use. But in this case, it is actually all our clients trying to figure out what their stance should be on, you know, sustainability and climate change and social change. And why is that so? I think that sense of urgency. And also, so they're all asking themselves this, but it doesn't necessarily lead to a lot of action. So let's just be very clear about that. I don't want to sound too naive. It doesn't, but they're all, at least they're asking themselves, should we do something? And what, if so, what should that be? And why is that? I think it's probably to know, it can be to no surprise to any of the people listening here that a lot of younger consumers find it distasteful to be consuming while the world is burning, if you know that your consumption is contributing to that. So that is certainly one aspect that if you have younger consumers as your target group, then you have to take a stand. That's one piece. But then I think there's something that we sometimes tend to underestimate a little bit, and that I have just experienced as being as relevant and important here. A lot of people and a lot of business leaders want to do the right thing if they can convince themselves and their shareholders that that is the case. And why is that? Well, they also sit around the dinner table and at the dinner parties discussing what they do. And if there is a young audience at that table, maybe their kids, they will be asked, what are you doing? And it is very embarrassing to have to admit that I'm pretty much not doing anything because my shareholders don't want that. The shareholder argument is also increasing, becoming a cop-out because many shareholders are asking their CEOs, are you managing the risk going forward of our business in a situation where more and more consumers are becoming critical consumers and where supply chains are being under pressure because the world is changing around you. So it's becoming easier for leaders to do the right thing, so to speak. And we then, therefore, I guess I'm lucky that there is now a momentum to help them make these changes. That certainly was a lot more uphill 5-10 years ago.
You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bache. The second part of my interview with Charlotte Vangsgaard from Red Associates is coming up in a moment.
Dubai Tourism is proud to partner with The Entrepreneurs on Monocle 24. Dubai is one of the most dynamic and innovative cities on the planet in which to do business, and a place where you can enjoy unrivaled quality of life. Dubai should be your destination, whether you're looking to start a new venture or take your career to the next level. Sonia Gokhale is a founding partner of venture capital firm VentureSouq, which has more than 100 companies in its portfolio. Originally from Canada, she says Dubai's rich diversity and wealth of top talent can help your career and business take off.
One of the best things about living and running a business in Dubai is that Dubai is very multicultural. We live and work with amazing people from everywhere in the world. It's such a unique place to be. There's something for everyone in Dubai, whether you're young and single or have a family. There is sunshine year-round, beaches everywhere, and Dubai is extremely safe. And as a mother, I really appreciate that.
Sonia Gokhale there. Dubai, the future of business is here.
Well, you mentioned before that you do work in the luxury sector, which is of particular interest to us, of course. You mentioned to me in past a bit of a hesitancy there to invest in this world of sustainability, which seems to be a conversation across the board when we're talking about consumer goods, especially in desirable products and in things that we perhaps don't always need to be consuming. How do you approach the conversation there?
It's a very interesting business, and pretty much any business can be, but the luxury business is interesting from a consulting point of view for me because, first of all, as a social scientist, the dreams that they create, of course, fascinate. They are fun to engage with and interesting to engage with. That's one aspect. But the other is that it's also a business where the margins are substantial, which means that they can do a lot. They are not constantly under pressure to just break even, or that is not the situation most luxury firms are in, at least not the ones that we work with. So they have the finances to allow them to do what they want to do. So there's no financial excuse, so to speak. So for them, very often it becomes, you know, investing, leading with a social impact agenda is also it's a courageous thing to do. And the luxury industry, many of them, when it comes to their own operations, not just their supply chain, but also even, you know, where their offices are, how they are organized. Some companies have only recently started to make their numbers public, right? They have been used to operating in this very, very private and discreet world where the discreeter you are, the better for the business. And not because they're doing anything dodgy necessarily, just because it's also what their clients typically would. They have also learned over the years that if you live discreetly, especially in Europe, you can protect your wealth. So it is a world that it has that very ambiguous relationship to going public. So that's one aspect. When you go public with a social impact strategy, you also put your head up and you allow yourself to be scrutinized. If you come out with a big claim saying, we are now going to reduce, let's say, the CO2 footprint of our production by this and that much, and we are aiming for zero in year 2030. Then, of course, you'll be scrutinized. You're telling the world this is what you're going to do. The world will look at you and say, well, you're also trying to harvest a lot of positive attention here. You're trying to create a market advantage for yourself by saying this. Therefore, you should be scrutinized and you will be scrutinized. And when leaders realize that, they start thinking, oh, maybe 5 years ago, 2 years ago, I did this or that, my company did this or that. We had a supplier that today certainly couldn't be scrutinized and come out well. There are all sorts of issues that most companies have. And I think the luxury industry, they are hesitant for that reason. They are afraid that the upside of going public is not worth the risk of being criticized and scrutinized. So therefore, what we are seeing, and that's the debate that we are having with a lot of our clients, is they are, many are doing lots of good things, but they so far have preferred to keep that very private. And I think they should do more. I think they can do more. And I think they need to risk it, because I think it's one of those situations. I don't think they can't win by keep insisting on being discreet and private. I think it's actually a bigger risk. But that is an ongoing debate and discussion that we are having with our clients. It's complicated. I think there are lots of numbers to show that the most courageous, cocky CEOs that go out and declare that now their company is going to go down this path of zero emission, zero this, zero that, that it doesn't always end well. It's complicated, but that's also why you really need to understand the world you are a part of. And that, again, you can't understand that by just looking at past behaviors. You have to look at the world around you to think through how you're going to have a more positive impact on the world.
Well, that's really, really interesting. You know, I think marketing strategy that we've known for many, many years is in the importance of connecting to people's emotional side, of course, and that can drive a lot of consumer decisions. There's one great example I heard from one of your other partners, I believe, in a podcast, Michael Rasmussen, and I think this is even highlighted on your website, talking about the work you've done with Lego there. And to get back into the social science side of the work you do, the work there was to talk about what is the purpose of this product, and that is in the joy of children and play. And that seemed to be lost on this brand, but they've had a great turnaround. Talk to me just a little bit about that and this idea of connecting to what is your core purpose and customer.
Yeah, what we typically try to do is when you're going to research something and understand something, you need to figure out what is at the heart of that company's things they do. You know, what is it really about? And in Lego's case, it's very much about play and creativity and understanding the role of play and creativity in kids' lives and in families' lives then become core to developing a strong strategy and a purpose for the company, connecting to that play and creativity. Very often companies get lost on that. Again, it's the same old story. They get caught up in all the tasks of getting the next product out there and forget what is the core human need that the company is trying to deliver on. And that, of course, is also the case for the luxury industry. If they forget that the core human need is very tied to desire, feeling desirable, having a place in the world, feeling relevant, then they start becoming irrelevant. It's fundamental to all companies, really, to think about what human world their products and services sit within.
Talking about doing meaningful work, to go back to where you started, I guess, with this company some 15 years ago, thinking about where you could have an impact and how you could have an impact in the world. How is that now in your position in being able to work with clients to find their purpose, to find what their impact can be? I guess that is kind of exciting in a way that you can have these conversations all the time and sort of help people in the right direction.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's extremely fulfilling. And it also, I haven't had one job. I've had many jobs in the company, moving between our Copenhagen office, our New York office, and now increasing focus on building our Paris business. You know, at some point you think, is this really what you want to spend the next 10 years on? Just same old, same old. Being able to combine these different interests is extremely rewarding. We are expanding, working increasingly also with organizations that are 100% focused on social impacts and changing the world, so the whole philanthropy space, and where some of the most interesting organizations in that space are also using the way that we look at how to create strategy and are increasingly going down that path too. We're doing great, interesting work on how to build trust in the communities with the Gates Foundation. That will be extremely important in terms of getting the world out of the COVID pandemic. and especially the world that is not in Paris and New York, figuring out how trust can be built. And it's the same thing as with Lego, the same question. It's when is that the heart of what is trying to be get done? And in this case, when people don't trust vaccines and trust the people that are going to give them the vaccines and put the vaccines into their arms, how can you expect that they're going to get vaccinated?
I wonder, just lastly, Charlotte, if I could ask you about the company and its makeup. For you now in a leadership role as a senior partner, this might be quite interesting for our listeners around the world who own their own businesses and are thinking about growing their teams. Obviously, the importance is in getting great people, but you've referenced a couple of times the fact that you may not have the traditional people in this type of company that many might think of. You are a makeup of anthropologists, of socialists, of economists, of people with great backgrounds that can really have an impact here. How has that been to have this great wealth within the company to grow?
We have built, I think, a community for social scientists, ethnographers, anthropologists that work in business. We hired them and built our practice together, and many have then moved into companies on the company side and are influencing the way companies work from the inside. Some have moved to other consulting firms, and it's kind of like it's an endless cycle, but also a beautiful cycle of working with people that typically haven't seen themselves as relevant for a business, but that I believe are more relevant than a lot of the people that get hired sort of straight out of business school to drive change in companies, at least. And I think a lot of these, that great talent that we've brought in, have become extremely successful in driving change also from within after they've left RED. It's a beautiful thing to see how a practice starts as a small imagined project, that then, even though we're not huge, we certainly, I believe, have had quite an impact on ways companies think, simply because of all these people coming from the humanities that normally would not even waste 2 seconds and think about business.
Very, very well said. Charlotte, thank you so much for your time. It's been great to hear about RED, and we wish you the best of luck going forward, of course, and hope we can check in again with you soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Daniel. It was a pleasure.
Charlotte Vangsgaard, a partner at RED Associates. That's all for this week. Make sure to tune in to next week's program as we preview the soon-to-be-released Monocle Book of Entrepreneurs, a guide to starting and running your own business, which is available for pre-order now at our website, monocle.com. My thanks to Jack Jewers, who mixed and edited this show. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.